8:07 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. This Mueller time, Mueller report, redacted release. Talk about that coming up. This segment of the show brought to you by C Spire. What if you only needed one company to take on all your technology challenges? One company to handle security, cloud, internet, and more. Introducing the new C Spire Business, the industry's first full-stack managed solution provider with over 500 service professionals, over 8,700 miles of fiber, and the ninth-ranked cloud system in the entire world. With everything in a single managed IT portfolio, the result is a faster, more secure way to do business. From desktop to data center, C Spire Business will meet you wherever you are and take on your biggest business technology challenges. Learn more at cspire.com/business. C Spire, customer inspired. All right, coming up this hour, our buddy Rob Hulbert will join us from Landnap. Lots to talk about with him. Also, we're going to try, we're looking at this, depends on, there's Washington time and there's real time. At 8:30, we've been told at 8:30, we'll be going to the bar presser preceding the Mueller report release. We have seen it enough times out of Washington. 8:30 may mean 8:45, may mean we'll watch it. As soon as that starts, we'll try to go to that.
Yeah, okay. And I've already, earlier this morning, the Democrats that are there in Washington saying that they don't want the Attorney General to hold his news conference. They called it unnecessary and inappropriate. And the House Judiciary Chair, Jerry Nadler, said the bar has taken unprecedented steps to spin the investigation. So moves being made by Democrats to at least delay this press conference. We'll see if that works, and we'll know by 8:30.
All right, very good. We'll be watching that here on Mobile Mornings. Also, as we start off, I want to check in with my buddy Tom Walsh with the Lions Club and the upcoming Tunnel Vision Run. Tom, what's up, man?
How you doing today, Sean?
I'm good. So how many years is it for y'all doing the Tunnel Vision?
Sean, this is our seventh year, and it has flown past. It's been such a fun event.
It has to be. You have to put a lot of trappings on it because y'all are running, right? I mean, you're running, so that part, needs a little party around it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event. It's going to be on May 4th, starting at 8 o'clock a.m. at the Downtown Public Library. We run down Government Street through the tunnel. Then we go past the battleship, and we end at Cafe Del Rio for what has turned out to be just the best part of the event every year for a party.
Yeah, that's how it works. You run, and then you get the party. It's the carrot at the end of the string there. Talk to us about that, number one, the run, getting signed up. And number two here, let's talk about Lions Club, if people aren't familiar with what y'all do.
Well, you can go to Eventbrite.com and get to the registration. You can also register the day of, and we'll be handing out packets also the day before. But really, the Lions Club and what we do is the reason, what we're doing this is for the blind and visually impaired. The money and all the proceeds after the expenses go to help the Lions Eyesight Research Institute, Camp Seal Harris, and a number of other entities in the city. We just are doing a great job with local school children doing free eye screens. It is an amazing organization, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's great. I love charities when things stay local, like what y'all are doing with the Lions Club. And if people, you mentioned the Eventbrite site, when's cutoff to get signed up for this?
It is going to be the Thursday before, so that's going to be the 3rd. But again, you can register the day of the race. Just come a little bit early. We'll have a table set out in front of the public library downtown. Everybody will be gathering there, stretching and getting ready for the race, and then we'll start right at 8 o'clock, right after we have someone sing the national anthem.
All right, great stuff. We appreciate it, and we'll talk about this more between now and May the 4th. Tom Walsh with the Lions Club of Mobile. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Sean. Take care.
Hey, you too. One of the events coming up in the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of stuff going on this weekend and next, and we'll kind of run through that stuff coming up in probably tomorrow's show. All right, we are working on this. Hopefully we'll have Rob Hulbert joining us here shortly, and then we will go I say this just with some trepidation because we watch how this works. We should go to the bar presser around 8:35 or so. That, of course, can float because sometimes, you know, the time for one of those pressers comes on and you're watching the feed from Washington and you see the podium. Nobody's standing behind the podium, but they're waiting and you wait and you wait and you wait. And then all of a sudden they run in there and it's time to go.
Yeah, how many times have we seen that with White House pressers over the last, 10, 20 years where the whole national media, everyone's broadcasting the presser, whether it was when Obama was president or Trump with Sarah Sanders, and they say, we'll be there at 11 a.m. That's when the presser starts. And then they get started right around 11:45, noon, right, something right. like that. So Washington time, a little bit different than our time. And I'm not just talking about the time zone differences.
That's right. We'll keep an eye on it and go to that. And also, maybe by the time the Mueller report comes out, about an hour after that, we start working on our Mad Libs, you know, where we take the redacted sections and you get to choose an adverb, adjective, proper name, noun, and we can make our own Mueller report unredacted. It won't be true, but... go to the news, and then we're coming right back. Hey, thanks, Kane. 818 FM Talk 106.5 online at fmtalk1065.com. Remember, when you're there, check out three big things, top stories of the day, online opinion poll question, and yeah, one of the places, one of the many places, you can grab all those podcasts we post up every week. Check it out, fmtalk1065.com. And you all say hello to our buddy Rob Hulbert with Lanyap, and Lanyap now available in the gritty Mobile County edition and the pastel watercolor Sperry Topsider Baldwin County edition. Hey, man.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I think just each, you know, how you have the different covers. Each week you just take whatever the cover is for Mobile and then do a watercolor version of that with some seagulls.
This week is a guy swinging a baseball bat on the cover on the Mobile, which mm-hmm. is lovely, and it's American. And then there's a beautiful scene from the Delta on the Baldwin cover. They're both beautiful. They're both suitable for framing, I would say.
Well, you just about, like this one, the photograph of the baseball player, I would just suggest for your Delta scene, it would be a watercolor for Baldwin County. Well. Just want to point that out. Let's stick with Mobile for a second here, because there's something that you and I have been watching. Maybe there's others. I just have not heard from them in the media that have this, I think, rightful obsession with the fact that the Mobile City Council and the mayor, Mayor Stimson's administration, are in a lawsuit that is now in mediation, which leaves me scratching my head how that's supposed to help. And you are rolling out this morning the price tag on this thing so far. Y'all, hopefully y'all are sitting down. Rob, what have they spent in taxpayer money so far?
Well, so I'm going to point out just real quickly, this is the kind of reporting that only Lanyap is doing.
Yep.
So
yep.
Those people who are complaining about our paywall, this is what I want you to point out. This is what the kind of stuff we're doing. This is what helps pay for that kind of reporting. The city so far has spent $60,000 on attorneys to have this mediation. $60,000. $61,000 actually. And Dale Leach went and did the reporting on this. And you know, it's kind of this has been since December.
So, oh my gosh!
Since December. Okay, so you know, we're talking about a pretty good clip here.
Yes,
for mediation.
Right, and I want to let's circle back for a second. If people have not caught us ranting about this in the past, my frustration, until somebody can educate me why I'm wrong, that's fine. I will listen to them, but mediation is not the solution for this. If we're trying to figure out, we the people are trying to figure out what the Zogby Act says, which part of our city government has which powers, a mediation doesn't set precedent. It just gets people to agree, right?
That's my understanding of the word mediation.
And why are we doing this? Why?
And on top of that, we've been mediating for 4 months, and you know, and I don't really understand what level of mediation is occurring. I mean, granted, now they have not said a word about it. The judge says you can't talk about it, so we have no understanding of what it is that they are, what they're doing. But again, like you said, if it's a mediation, it doesn't really deal with the issue down the road. Even if they all come together, even mm-hmm. if this group of people, even if this city council that can't even elect its own president, even if those people and the mayor get together and say, we agree on this and we will not fight anymore about this, even if that happens, it doesn't mean that the next time that there's a new mayor and a new council that these same issues won't come back up, unless it is lined out by law at this point by a judge. I think that it's just become a fight that is going to have to be settled. And I think you and I both agree on that. It's got to be, somebody's got to say, I'm the judge, and here's how it's going to work.
Yes, and if we're going to spend $61,000 so far in taxpayer dollars, I would love at the end of this payment schedule here that we have some decision on this is in the Zogby Act, who gets to do this, who gets to do that, who gets to fire this person, who gets to hire this person, and then that can be resolved business that we don't have to pay for again down the road. Like you said, what Rob's saying, y'all, is even if there's an agreement in this mediation and they figure out who's going to do what, that's not the new rule. That's just the agreement between these people that exist in these positions right now. It could change in 5 years, 10 years, 2 years.
The only thing that I could think of that would possibly come out of this that would fix this issue is if they are all sitting down and agreeing to a redrafting of the Zogby Act that they're going to ask the legislature to pass. That's the only thing I could possibly think of that would fix this from a mediation standpoint. That they are coming together to put together an agreement and say, okay, we're going to have this passed into law or something. Because if it doesn't have the teeth behind it, it can just be changed the next time somebody's in office.
And then they'll go to mediation again at that point for another.
Yeah, so they're fighting over this, and I mean, ostensibly, what they're fighting over is public relations person for the council, and who is now already billed. She's got $25,000 in bills that are hanging out there from December as well. So she's waiting, she's billing at a rate of about $75,000 a year. I'm not real sure exactly what's going on with all that, but it's, there's that, and then you've got $60,000 on top of that. The mayor's office says all their mediation stuff, all their attorneys have been covered under their $55,000 a month contract with their law firm, and they have not spent any additional money at this point.
Once again, what the question here is that is actually bigger than the individual circumstance, if I'm right, is who from the executive branch to the legislative branch, for lack of better terms here in this, in city government, who has the right to hire and who has the right to say whether that person is retained, right? It's who has the authority.
That's correct. It's does the council has two positions that they they have the city attorney, and there's another one, but they have two positions. I'm sorry, I can't figure it off the top of my head, but they have two positions that are lined out in Zogby Act that they can deal with, that they can hire, but there's nothing else lined out. The rest of it is under the mayor's office according to the Zogby Act. So what they're saying is, look, we want to be able to hire some of our own people too. Mayor's office says, look, if we just let you guys hire willy-nilly, you're going to hire people all over the place. And so the mayor's office wants to retain that power. And so that's where they are.
Is there another subtlety here, too, to the kind of employees that the two bodies would hire for merit versus tenure employees? Is that?
I mean, it all boils down to how they're going to be. Yeah, I mean, it gets into the question of where they're going to serve, who they're under. That's the thing is, when the mayor agreed to have the public relations person brought on, that, they wanted to hire the PR person, but the mayor's office said, we'll hire them for you, basically. They'll work. They're working through us, but you can have them.
All right. So, once again, $61,000 in. Y'all are reporting that, but still no answers.
Yeah, there's no answers. And, I hope that, we hope, obviously, everybody hopes, I think, that this will take care of itself sometime soon. But, when you get to the end of this mediation, are you going to look back at it and say, okay, that was worth the $61,000, or that was worth the $100,000, or $200,000, whatever it is when it finally ends? Is it going to be worth that? That's going to be a real question for it. I hope that's going to be something that we see. But I still have my doubts that there's going to be anything in here that's going to make somebody do. It's going to deal with bigger issues.
Let's stay for, we just got about 3 minutes left here, but I want to go to the cover story, Dale's cover story about the Bay Bears, and go down even more narrow into the future of Hank Aaron Stadium. What's the takeaway here?
Well, I mean, the takeaway is essentially that you know, we're we are basically, we have to have a sports team out there, some sort of sports related entity out there. Otherwise, it can revert back to the, apparently the land that it is built on is owned by another, is owned by a local family, and it, you know, the contract says it has to be used for sporting, you know, some sort of athletic group to use. And so there's talk about some independent league baseball teams coming in to the city and playing there, but there's even discussion about possibly something else going on out there. But the city says, hey, yeah, we've got to, we have to put something there that's sports related.
Right. Okay. So that's the definition of, and we could see if it could be renegotiated. But the way I understand it as well, if we fail, the city of Mobile fails to do that, not only does the land revert, but I think the city is on for the demolition of the structure.
I'm sure. Yeah. You know, that's
insult to injury.
It could be a big problem. I mean, I would imagine the city would find something there before that, that would occur. I'm sure, you know, I have little doubt that we probably could find some sort of baseball team. The question is whether that is going to be functional or really drive anything out there.
All right. We'll find out here, I guess, at the end of the season with the Bay Bears getting ready to become the Trash Pandas.
Yeah, and I will say one quickly that the Bay Bears folks out there, this season, there is one last season here, and they are trying very hard to make some different changes out there to have it be a lot of fun for folks, and that's kind of some part of the story as well. They're doing some interesting things, so, you know, it's a good opportunity to go out and see them again. It is a fun time. I mean, I've always enjoyed going out there.
And yeah, this time of year, until it gets to be 9,000 degrees. But then I know that you and Dalton don't mind. I worry about bacon in the seats. All right, remind folks, if they've not picked up a copy of Land Yap lately, where do they find them?
You can find us all over Mobile and Baldwin counties, 1,500 different locations, these beautiful purple boxes, and there's the few hideous pink boxes that are still left out there. You can check us out online at landyapmobile.com, and you know, there's different plans there. You can have us delivered to your home as well.
All right, Rob Holbert with Land Yap, thank you, man. And just consider what I suggested, that, you know, when you decide on the cover of the Baldwin County edition, you take what you're doing in Mobile or anything else, but you make it in a watercolor.
Yeah, I just kind of imagine that guy that with the big afro that used to paint on TV, kind of doing the Baldwin cover. That's, you know, what was his name?
Bob Ross. Bob Ross. Of course it's Bob Ross.
Pretty Little Trees.
Yeah, Pretty Little Trees,
pretty little
and
trees,
Pretty Seagulls, and just put wharves everywhere, piers everywhere, seagulls. Yeah. You know, and it'll contrast it with our gritty Mobile County edition. Something to look into. Rob, thank you, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Y'all have a great week.
All right, we'll do. Rob Holbert with Land Yap joining us. And we'll probably be, when we come back, the chances are we'll be going to the bar presser, but that's going to be a ball in play. Check the news and the weather here and traffic, and then we'll hopefully take you straight to Washington to that press conference. 8:30, coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.
Thirty-five on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings on a Thursday. Everybody get ready. Some weather rolling into the area later today. Staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams with the updates twice an hour, every hour, right here on FM Talk 106.5. Right now we head over to McConnell Automotive where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, Dalton. How are you, buddy?
I am doing great, but not as great as you guys out there at McConnell because the pink tag sale still ongoing.
Man, we're having fun with it. If you come to my lot, Dalton, you'll see every vehicle literally has a hanging tag in it. And it's real simple. If you can imagine in your mind being able to buy what a GM employee pays, pay what a GM employee pays, I should say, that's what's hanging on the cars, man. So my favorite example is we've got about 12 or 13 of the remaining 18 trucks because we got the new Sierra, you know, the 19 model. And those trucks have sticker prices, some of them around 54, 55, and don't, you just take $13,000 off the price. So you end up buying it supplier minus rebates, and we've got 11% off a Yukon, 16% off an Enclave. So, you know, if customers like to go back and forth with salespeople and sales managers, this is not a good sale. But if you really like saving huge money, and, you know, this could pay for a family vacation, because if you're going to buy a GMC or a Buick anywhere at any time, this is literally going to save you $3,000-$5,000 more than any time I've seen in the last 6 or 8 months. And, you know, you literally just come pick your vehicle out and say, that's the one I want. We've got great financing rates and, you know, paying the top dollar like we always do for trade-ins. So I think it's just really the perfect time for somebody to shop. And all they got to do is go to our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, and check out all the savings.
All right. Thanks, Mitch.
Buddy, y'all have a great day.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
All right, let's go to the Attorney General Bill Barr. Presser already in progress.
Election. As the special counsel report makes clear, the Russian government sought to interfere in our election process. But thanks to the special counsel's thorough investigation, we now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American, for that matter. That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. Following a thorough investigation of this disinformation campaign, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian nationals and entities for their respective roles in this scheme. Those charges remain pending, and the individual defendants remain at large. But the special counsel found no evidence that any American, including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government or the IRA in this illegal scheme. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities. Second, the report details efforts by the Russian military officials associated with the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Organization, to hack into computers and steal documents and emails from individuals associated with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign for the purpose of eventually publicizing these documents. Obtaining such unauthorized following a thorough investigation of these hacking operations, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian military officers for their respective roles in these illegal hacking operations. Those charges are still pending, and the defendants remain at large. But again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants, and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation. As I addressed in my March 24th letter, the special counsel did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment regarding this allegation. Instead, the report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. After carefully reviewing the facts and legal theories outlined in the report, and in consultation with the Office of Legal Counsel and other department lawyers, the Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Although the Deputy Attorney General and I disagreed with some of the special counsel's legal theories and felt that some of the episodes examined did not amount to obstruction as a matter of law, we did not rely solely on that in making our decision. Instead, we accepted the special counsel's legal framework for purposes of our analysis and evaluated the evidence as presented by the special counsel in reaching our conclusions. In assessing the president's actions discussed in the report, it is important to bear in mind the context. President Trump faced an unprecedented situation. As he entered into office and sought to perform his responsibilities as president, federal agents and prosecutors were scrutinizing his conduct before and after taking office and the conduct of some of his associates. At the same time, there was relentless speculation in the news media about the president's personal culpability. Yet, as he said from the beginning, there was, in fact, no collusion. And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents, and fueled by illegal leaks. Nonetheless, the White House fully cooperated with the special counsel's investigation, providing unfettered access to campaign and White House documents, directing senior aides to testify freely, and asserting no privilege claims. And at the same time, the president took no act that in fact deprived the special counsel of the documents and witnesses necessary to complete his investigation. Apart from whether the acts were obstructive, this evidence of non-corrupt motives weighs heavily against any allegation that the president had a corrupt intent to obstruct the investigation. Now, before I take questions, I want to address a few aspects of the process for producing the public report that I am releasing today. As I said several times, the report contains limited redactions related to four categories of information. To ensure as much transparency as possible, those redactions have been clearly labeled so that the readers can tell which redactions correspond to which categories. Now, to recall, those categories are 6E material, grand jury material, information that the IC believes would disclose sources and methods, information that would impair the investigation and prosecution of other cases that are underway. And finally, information that implicates the privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties. As you will see, most of the redactions were compelled by the need to prevent harm to ongoing matters and to comply with court orders prohibiting the public disclosure of information bearing on ongoing investigations and criminal cases, such as the IRA case and the Roger Stone case. These redactions were applied by Department of Justice attorneys working closely together with attorneys from the special counsel's office, as well as the intelligence community, and prosecutors are handling the ongoing cases. The redactions are their work product. No redactions done by anybody outside this group. There were no redactions done by anybody outside this group. No one outside this group proposed any redactions, and no one outside the department has seen the unredacted report, with the exception of certain sections that were made available to IC, the intelligence community, for their advice on protecting intelligence sources and methods. Consistent with longstanding executive branch practice, the decision whether to assert executive privilege over any portion of the report rested with the President of the United States. Because the White House had voluntarily cooperated with the special counsel, significant portions of the report contained material over which the President could have asserted privilege, and he would have been well within his rights to do so. Following my March 29th letter, the Office of the White House Counsel requested the opportunity to review the redacted version of the report in order to advise the President on the potential invocation of privilege, which is consistent with longstanding practice. Following that review, the President confirmed that in the interest of transparency and full disclosure to the American people, he would not assert privilege over the special counsel's report. Accordingly, the public report I am releasing today contains redactions only for the four categories that I previously outlined, and no material has been redacted based on executive privilege. In addition, earlier this week, the President's personal counsel requested and was given the opportunity to read a final version of the redacted report before it was publicly released. That request was consistent with the practice followed under the Ethics in Government Act, which permitted individuals named in a report prepared by an independent counsel the opportunity to read the report before publication. The President's personal lawyers were not permitted to make and did not request any redactions. In addition to making the redacted report public, we are also working with Congress to accommodate their legitimate oversight interests with respect to the special counsel's investigation. We have been consulting with Chairman Graham and Chairman Nadler through this process, and we will continue to do so. Given the limited nature of the redactions, I believe that the publicly released report will allow every American to understand the results of the special counsel's investigation. Nevertheless, in an effort to accommodate congressional requests, we will make available, subject to appropriate safeguards, to a bipartisan group of leaders from several congressional committees, a version of the report with all redactions removed, except those relating to grand jury information. Thus, these members of Congress will be able to see all of the redacted material for themselves, with a limited exception of that which by law cannot be shared. I believe that this accommodation, together with my upcoming testimony before the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, will satisfy any need Congress has for information regarding the special counsel's investigation. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being here, and I will now have a few questions.
Mr. Attorney General, we don't have the report in hand, so could you explain for us the special counsel's articulated reason for not reaching a decision on obstruction of justice, and if it had anything to do with the department's longstanding guidance on not indicting a sitting president? And you say you disagreed with some of his legal theories. What did you disagree with him on?
I'd leave it to his description in the report, the special counsel's own articulation of why he did not want to make a determination as to whether or not there was an obstruction offense. But I will say that when we met with him, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and I met with him, along with Ed O'Callaghan, who is the principal associate deputy, on March 5th, we specifically asked him about the OLC opinion and whether or not he was taking the position that he would have found a crime but for the existence of the OLC opinion. And he made it very clear several times that that was not his position. He was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have found a crime. He made it clear that he had not made the determination that there was a crime.
What did you disagree with him on?
Given that, why did you and Mr. Rosenstein feel the need you had to take it to the next step to conclude that there was no crime, especially given that DOJ policy?
Well, the very prosecutorial function and all our powers as prosecutors, including the power to convene grand juries and the compulsory process that's involved there, is for one purpose and one purpose only. It's determine yes or no. Was alleged conduct criminal or not criminal? That is our responsibility, and that's why we have the tools we have. And we don't go through this process just to collect information and throw it out to the public. We collect this information, we use that compulsory process for the purpose of making that decision. And because the special counsel did not make that decision, we felt the department had to, and that was a decision by me and the Deputy Attorney General.
Yes. Did the special counsel indicate that he wanted you to make the decision or that it should be left for Congress? And also, how do you respond to criticism you're receiving from congressional Democrats that you're acting more as a attorney for the president rather than as the chief law enforcement officer?
Special Counsel Mueller did not indicate that his purpose was to leave the decision to Congress. I hope that was not his view, since we don't convene grand juries and conduct criminal investigations for that purpose. I didn't talk to him directly about the fact that we were making the decision, but I am told that his reaction to that was that it was my prerogative as Attorney General to make that decision.
Attorney General Barr Catherine Herridge, Fox News. Hi there. Is there anything you can share today about your review of the genesis of the Russia investigation and whether assets have been provided to investigate?
No, today I'm really focused just on the process of releasing this report.
Attorney General,
senior Democrats in Congress have asked for Robert Mueller himself to testify. Robert Mueller remains a Justice Department employee as of this moment. Will you permit him to testify publicly to Congress?
I have no objection to Bob Mueller personally testifying.
Mr. Attorney General, it's not just Democrats who have questioned some of the process here. A Republican-appointed judge on Tuesday said you have, quote, created an environment that has caused a significant part of the American public to be concerned about these redactions. You cleared the president on obstruction. The president is fundraising off of your comments about spying. And here you have remarks that are quite generous to the president, including acknowledging his feelings and his emotions. So what do you say to people on both sides of the aisle who are concerned that you are trying to protect the president?
Well, actually, the statements about his sincere beliefs are recognized in the report that there was substantial evidence for that. So I'm not sure what your basis is for saying that I'm being generous to the president.
You face an unprecedented situation. It just seems like there's a lot of effort to go out of your way to acknowledge how this.
Well, is there another precedent for it?
No, but it's unusual.
Okay, so unprecedented is an accurate description, isn't it?
Yes, but
okay.
What do you say to people who are concerned that you were trying to protect the president?
Eric. There's a lot of public interest in the absence of the special counsel and members of his team. Was he invited to join you up on the podium? Why is he not here? This is his report, obviously, that you're talking about today.
No, it's not.
The report he did for me as the Attorney General. He is required under the regulation to provide me with a confidential report. I'm here to discuss my response to that report and my decision, entirely discretionary, to make it public, since these reports are not supposed to be made public. That's what I'm here to discuss.
Impropriety for you to come out and sort of what appears to be sort of spinning the report before the public gets a chance to read it?
Thank you very much.
All right, there it is. When he said a few questions, he took a few questions.
Yeah, a few.
And then moving on. Attorney General Barr, no evidence that any American conspired or coordinated with Russia. I mean, this is very similar to what we heard Barr say before. I don't know that anything new came out. He discussed some, again, of why portions of the Mueller report were going to be redacted. Also, mm-hmm. who would get to see the, something you and I talked about here off air, the unredaction of the redactions in the report. So they will unredact the report for some people. And then those members of Congress get to see it, although there's some parts of it that none of them get to see.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's coming on CD-ROM. A lot of people wondering about that. Because for email files, I guess in the federal government, they recommend keeping that under 10 megabytes. And the full Mueller report, along with whatever
files.
A full Mueller
wrestling move.
Would be right around 10 megabytes. So the CD-ROM could contain the whole thing. And also, like you said, some of the members of Congress won't have the same redacted version as the public. So there's different versions going out there, and they want to make sure that it's a little bit harder to disseminate some of those.
Yeah, because they could never get it off a CD-ROM onto the web and never get it posted. That would be impossible. Who could do that?
And one more thing you mentioned that a lot of Democrats were worried about also. He says Attorney General Barr says President Trump not invoking executive privilege over any portions of Mueller's report.
So that takes away that rumor mill.
Right.
All right. We'll get some time to digest that. I know Mike Gallagher will do that for the next few hours, and we'll be back for Midday Mobile today. And it looks like we're supposed to. Okay, yeah, it's going to happen. Former mayor of the city of Mobile, Mike Dowd, joins us. He is now helming the ship at Gulf Quest. We're talking about the future of Gulf Quest with him coming up at noon today on Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher Show next. Y'all have a great one.